If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
It's cozy season, and nothing compares to wrapping yourself in a Minky Couture blanket. Luxuriously soft, perfectly warm, thoughtfully made. From movie nights to chilly mornings, Minky Couture turns everyday moments into pure comfort. Once you feel it, you'll understand why it's called the original best blanket ever. Visit MinkyCouture.com or a store near you and make this cozy season your softest one yet.
All right, welcome to Misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. I'm going to start by talking about how I met my next guest. I was living with a friend in Florida at the time. I had become a complete recluse. Everywhere I looked, every time I turned on the television, every time I opened a newspaper, my name was all over the news. And at the time, we didn't really have social media like we have now. You couldn't really look at your phone and just check it like we would do. But the social media at the time was Radar Online and TMZ. And it was, you know, updated hourly. And my name was at the top of the list. And it was devastating what people would say about me. And those things, for the most part, were not true. And it was debilitating to my self-esteem. I had really gotten into a point in my head where I literally couldn't function physically, mentally. I had lost all my friends. I had lost my family. I didn't trust anybody. It was really horrible. Talking about it makes me like upset to even remember that place that I was at. but I knew that I, you know, had to get out of that somewhere. And I got a phone call from someone who said, listen, you got to start getting out of your house. You got to figure out what you're going to do. And what I knew that I needed to do was figure out how to tell my own story without talking about what everyone else wanted to talk about. And to do that, it was to try and get people to understand who I was. And if they chose to dislike me after they knew who I was, that was fair. But they had to give me a chance to let them know who I was. And sorry, it's like so emotional thinking about that time in my life. So This is when Drew came into my life, and he's so important to me because he was the only person that I felt got me. So I actually got a crazy call before Drew, and it was Donald Trump. And he he called and he said, I want you to be on The Apprentice. You would be great. You're the biggest star right now. I did not see myself as a star, but that's what he saw as star quality, right? The person that was, you know, guiding headlines and making news. So I agreed to do Celebrity Apprentice. And my charity was the Red Cross. And I thought this would be a great way for me to show people who I was. I was smart. I was resourceful. So he set up a meeting with Michael Cohen, and I had lunch with Michael Cohen, and we figured out how I would move forward and go on that show. But at the same time, I was still feeling awful. I couldn't come out of the house. And the guy who had set up this meeting with Donald Trump also said, well, listen, I have this other opportunity at the same time. It's Celebrity Rehab. And I said, well, I don't have an addiction, so that's ridiculous. I'm not going to do that show. And they said, well, I just want you to meet Dr. Drew and have a conversation. And they kept offering more and more and more money. And I said, it's not about the money. I'm not going to do it. I don't have an addiction. And long story short, we met at the L'Hermitage the night before they started airing. And out within probably 30 minutes of sitting down, well, within the first 5 minutes, but we sealed the deal in 30 minutes, but of sitting with Dr. Drew, I knew that I was not going to go on The Apprentice. I knew that I needed to sit with Dr. Drew and go on Celebrity Rehab, not because I wanted to be on a reality show, but because I needed this man in my life. I knew that no one else got me, and I was so alone. Anyways, so without further ado, I'm going to introduce my next guest. It's Dr. Drew Pinsky, obviously. He's the most wonderful man in my life still to this day. He knows everything about me. He's a doctor, he's a podcaster, he's an author, and he's my good friend. So without further ado, Drew Pinsky.
Oh, Rachel, you're making me so emotional. I'll never forget sitting there. Were you with the sunglasses on? You couldn't make eye contact. And at the time I didn't know you, so it wasn't as distressful to me as it is now thinking back on what you were going through. And I really didn't know what you were going through also. I had no idea yet. And Oh my God. I bear witness. There's not one thing you said that would, in fact, I'd say you understated what it was like and what that went and the degree of distress you were in.
Yeah.
So, oh my goodness. So thank you for saying all that, but you and I are just going to sit here and cry about all this. I was wanting to say to you too, and you're not, we're both going to get very emotional, but your podcast name is so perfect because when I think about you, you've been misunderstood your whole life. And that I also had an opportunity to bear witness to. And there's a lot of unfair misunderstanding of Rachel, you could tell, I mean, across your lifespan. So this was just the major crisis in it, but it connected back to a lot of other stuff. So
thank you.
I'm here to tell you, and I want everyone to know Rachel worked hard. Rachel worked very hard on this stuff and kept going long after the camera stopped. And I think watching you from afar, I'm imagining you're continuing some of this stuff in some fashion to the very day. So yeah. Congratulations on your improvement and how well you've done.
Yeah, it obviously, the show had a huge impact on me. So I wanted to talk about it a little bit because people talk about reality shows to this day and talk about how fake they are, how staged they are. But for me, in my experience, that was not staged. So for people that have not seen Celebrity Rehab, let's talk about it for a second. There was 8 people on the show. We were brought into, where was that? In Pasadena, California.
It's a residential treatment program in Pasadena.
Okay. And you had done it for what, 3 seasons before mine, I think?
It's all a kind of a blur to me, what order everything was in. I remember everybody. I don't remember who was with who and in what order, but I would say we'd probably already done it 2 or 3 times by that point. Yeah.
Right. So But you guys had figured out the kinks, I think, by then. But so, but we had eight people on our season, and everybody was a pretty well-known actor or musician or somebody. And I remember coming in and feeling very awkward because I was not addicted to a substance per se. And I know that, so we had Leif Garrett, and he was addicted to heroin. He was actually in a serious withdrawal. Do you remember that when he came in? And then we had Eric Roberts, the actor. And we had Janice Dickinson, my roommate. You remember her? And obviously. And good, good. We had Jason Waller.
Who is, if you know, you should bring Jason in. He is a miracle. Oh my God. That guy is a rock star.
Yeah. No, he's great. I'm still friends with him. We had, let's see, Jeremy London, who had a very interesting story at the time. I think he had just gotten kidnapped or something, and had some interesting stories with his ex-wife, but wonderful guy who I became, you know, I became great friends with all these guys. And then let's see. And then we had,
Rachel, do you remember Janice coming in group one day and telling her Bill Cosby story? Because I had a memory of that. It might have been just she and I sitting in that room. I can't remember if the group was full or not, but she told the same story that she told many times later. And I don't even think she told me who it was. She just told me this story. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, it was blech.
Oh God, no, that's awful. I do remember her issues with men, obviously, and her father and all that stuff. And then of course, since then we've lost two people that were very special in the group, Frankie Lons and Jason Davis, which has been really hard. You know, in such a small group to have lost two people, it's incredibly difficult to see what addiction does to people because they did die of addiction.
Well, and it shortens your life, right? I mean, even if you don't die of addiction, like you know, Tom Sizemore was a dear man to me, and he just died of a brain aneurysm. It weakens your system. It gives you all kinds of other medical problems down the road. You can still think of it as an addiction death, but you know, it's because of having had this thing, even if it's in hand. It's very, very scary.
When was the last time you spoke to Tom?
It must have been, I'm trying to remember if it was during COVID. We probably a year and a half ago. Wow. Both Bob and I did with him. And Bob and I had known, we'd worked with Tom for many years in various settings. And we did extremely well with him when he would stay with us. But of course, you know how it is, people drift out and do their own thing. And then it doesn't go so well.
Right. So yeah, it's a horrible story. And I know everybody worked so hard being on that show. And so, you know, I just wanted to say my experience being on that show is that we all worked hard. And to get people to come on that show, yes, we're given a paycheck, right? So, and people, I think, don't really understand that, especially for that show, these are addicts, so they don't want to be there. And they're also actors and entertainers, so they're probably like, oh, great, I can make some money to feed my addiction, or whatever their reasons are. For me, I wanted to be there to tell my story because I needed people to know who I was without talking about the scandal, without being able to classify me in whatever, you know, narrative they wanted to give me, but I wanted them to see who I was without the other stuff going on. And if they chose to dislike me after that, that was total fair game. But, you know, I needed to be able to show who I was in between those lines. And, you know, I always say that, you know, there's only so much editing can do. You can only represent yourself how you want to represent yourself. And it's a very hard place to, you know, hide who you are for 30 days, and especially in those, you know, confines. So I quite frankly loved being there. I loved the people I was with, even though it was so hard. And I actually want to show a clip to remind you of the time that we had.
Before you do, you and I had some really interesting moments, but the one thing that immediately jumped out to me about you is how freaking smart you are. And And as a result, I always kind of teased you about this, but you don't, you're not super patient when things aren't smart, when things aren't, you know, you don't, I used to tell you, you don't suffer fools gladly. I'm sure that's still the case, but Rachel is so smart that she gets very impatient when people don't keep up with her. And that's, I think that it's funny to me. I think it's actually an asset.
Yeah. Yeah. You were the one that taught me that line for the first time when I was there, that I don't suffer.
I could see in your eyes. You're like, oh yeah, that's me.
Yeah. Because when you explained that to me, that I don't suffer fools gladly, I remember saying to you, what does that mean? But, and you had to stop me and say, you got to have a little patience for people to catch up, because I was like, I'm here to work this out. I'm here to figure this out. And you're like, Rachel, you're dealing with addicts that, you know, and you have to also trust people. They have to trust you. Like, slow down for a second.
Part of that is that trust building stuff. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. But I want to show that clip for a second.
Most of the ones that are having that kind of trouble are aware they're doing it and are literally trying not to, and hear themselves do it and are very upset that they do it, and they do it anyway. Mm-hmm. It's part of their condition.
I think that's part of their condition. I don't think it's part of her condition. I think she can just be rude because she thinks she's more important than everybody else here, and it's her television show. That's what I see. Okay. I don't see it as part of her disease.
So when she talks about how injured she is and how anxious she is and how traumatized she was.
It depends what she talks about. She said in meetings that she had an alcoholic father, and then Jason Davis said something about alcoholism and said she had an alcoholic father, and she jumped down his throat and said her father wasn't an alcoholic. So I don't know what we're dealing with.
We know he was abusive.
I'm sure he was. Yeah. I'm not taking that away from her. Yeah. I can tell when it's about being in front of the camera because she wants it to be about her, and when it's about a real feeling. I think you can too.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
I don't know what you're talking about. Okay. If you're accusing me of lying, then we have a huge, huge problem.
Lying? I didn't accuse you of lying. I accused you of letting her get away with stuff that I think you know is a problem to people that are really trying to go through something.
I'm trying to understand exactly, because I heard multiple different
complaints. Okay, I don't want to argue with you, because this hostility is not about you. So I don't want you to start making it about you, and then we'll have a real problem, because then we'll start not getting along, which is what you're starting to do. So why don't I leave, and I will go read the book you asked me to read, and we'll be done with this conversation. Is that okay with you?
It's okay with me. Okay.
I loved how you challenged me. You know why? Because that's you working. You were in it. You were there. And there is stuff, you know, there's, as I'm not sure I understood what you were at the time, but as I look at it now from a camera, every time I sat down with somebody, I had to think to myself, are they saying this for the camera? Are they saying this for real? Are they editing for the camera? Because you understand, part of my job was not to out somebody in front of a camera, right? I mean, if they want to keep something that happens in real life, you'd push harder, but in front of a camera, like, if they don't want to put that out there, I have to protect that. I have to support that. Mm-hmm. But you were telling me something different, which I didn't get, which was that she was essentially, I don't know, maybe it's not the right word, but sort of mugging for the camera, right? That she was pulling shit out for the camera.
Right. Right. And I was coming in from a perspective of, I'm a civilian. I just became famous, sort of, right? Within a couple of weeks of, or whatever, a couple of months of coming onto that show, I didn't consider myself a celebrity. I was just a girl coming on there trying to get help. And I was surrounded by celebrities. So it was the first time I was seeing that. And I was talking to you like, I'm here to get help. And all these people are doing all these crazy things for the camera. Like, what are we doing here? You know what I mean? So,
for sure. For sure. And anyway. I had trouble. I'm always trying to sort that out. So you were actually helping me and challenging me. And, you know, we were forging our relationship, which was the part I appreciated. Was, and by the way, if people don't know, Rachel went out the wrong door, which was a very intentional move on her part, I think, because that was supposed to be all, wasn't supposed to be in the camera, wasn't supposed to be there, wasn't supposed to exist. And so we were forging our relationship. And you hung in. And that was really the part. And I know, and if you remember, I had conversations with you about this, You probably did that in the real world relationships and people would abandon you. And that I was not going to do that no matter what.
No. And you've never have abandoned me. And I always appreciated that. So part of me coming on this show is that you taught me all about love addiction. And that's what I wanted to get into here. Because so many people at the time, especially so long ago, made fun of that term. It has gotten much more commonplace now. So let's talk first about what that is. For me, it was, you know, where people mistake intensity, you know, for love, really. And, you know, and I made that mistake many times. It got me into a lot of trouble. But why don't you talk from your perspective of what it really is?
It's a construct. It's not a formal diagnosis. It doesn't sit in the DSM-4 or 5 or anything. It is a construct to help us help patients. And it works very, very well. It dovetails with many other different conditions. I think the other condition that's also not a DSM diagnosis is codependency. And it goes in with those sorts of conditions. Again, these are constructs that help people deal with what's going on in their internal lives. What Rachel's referring to is that one of the really common phenomenon with love addiction is that the addictive part is the lightning bolt and the intensity of the relationship that somebody is sort of can't break out of. First of all, is attracted to, much the way a drug addict would be attracted to their drugs, and gets addicted to that person in the same way. And they tend to go through a cycle as a result of that, of really a cycle, a common cycle. This is Pia Melody's cycle of sort of intensity, you know, walking on eggshells, abuse, forgiveness, intensity, and then back into these sort of weird cycles. There are various versions, you know, various sort of ways people do that. But it is an unpleasant way to live. It's something that even when you get people into treatment, they still need a little of that sometimes. People miss the intensity so much. So it's about getting them to get the balance right, which is very hard. And underlying all of it is really kind of a boundary issue.
Right.
Where self and other emotions start to get blurred. Like where you can be feeling a feeling, can be very intense, feel like you're feeling, but it's really something triggered by somebody else. It's not something primary and spontaneous in your feeling states.
Now, don't you think a lot of people get it confused between sex addiction? And can you talk about what the difference is between love and sex addiction?
Yes, sex addiction is a little more explicitly about the filling of that void and the intensity of the sexual experience. That can you know, many women come to sex addiction through love addiction. They're first love addicted, and then they get preoccupied with the intensity, and the sex tends to be the way that it fills that. But much like a drug, it needs constant refilling and increasing intensity over time. Love addiction doesn't include those sorts of behaviors necessarily. Love addiction is this cycle of abuse and intensity. Sex addiction is more and more and more extreme. Arousal in and around sexuality.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. Forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
It's cozy season, and nothing compares to wrapping yourself in a Minky Couture blanket. Luxuriously soft, perfectly warm, thoughtfully made. From movie nights to chilly mornings, Minky Couture turns everyday moments into pure comfort. Once you feel it, you'll understand why it's called the original best blanket ever. Visit MinkyCouture.com or a store near you and make this cozy season your softest one yet. It's cozy season, and nothing compares to wrapping yourself in a Minky Couture blanket. Luxuriously soft, perfectly warm, thoughtfully made. From movie nights to chilly mornings, Minky Couture turns everyday moments into pure comfort. Once you feel it, you'll understand why it's called the original best blanket ever. Visit MinkyCouture.com or a store near you and make this cozy season your softest one yet.
Right. Now, what is your thought about celebrities that are using love and sex addiction as excuses in these relationships for cheating?
I don't like the, let's parse that out a little bit, because when people say they're using an excuse, I get a little bit concerned, because it's like saying somebody used the fact that they got arrested as an excuse to go into treatment for drug addiction, right?
Right.
If people come to treatment, people do things around their problematic behaviors because somebody forces them to, typically, especially in the addictive realm, where people really, their brain fights them. The brain is going in a certain direction, and something has to come up against something before it will stop going in that direction. Mm-hmm. And so a spouse that catches that person is often what brings somebody to treatment for sex addiction, or, you know, an arrest or some sort of, they hurt themselves. But these are the things that bring them to treatment. Before that, they just keep going, right?
Right.
So the question then is, what do they do with it? If they in earnest engage in serious treatment and get better, well, I mean, Terry Crews identified as a porn addict at one point. And to me, it looked like he wasn't excusing anything. He was in treatment, doing well, and wanted to share his recovery. And, no excuses there. I'm sure he hurt somebody. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't pleasant to be in a relationship with him when he was acting out. But the difference is people who say it, talk about it, versus really do something about it.
So have you been following like the biggest story in everybody's news cycle for the last week, which is this Vanderpump Rules cheating scandal?
I have seen it. I don't really know much about it. So fill me in.
Okay. So, you know, Vanderpump Rules is the show on Bravo. And quite frankly, I haven't really watched that show. I don't really follow it. And there was a guy, Tom, who was dating a woman for 9 years, and he had an affair. He was caught having an affair with one of the friends on the show, a girl in the friend group, this girl, Raquel, and she just issued an apology blaming love addiction. I'm actually going to read you the statement she made, because this just came out yesterday. Is that okay?
Isn't it interesting now that love addiction is so common? I mean, you know what I mean? Back when you and I were talking about it, people would, they just, their eyes would glaze over.
Yeah, they would be like, it would go over their head.
Use.
So this was what she issued to Entertainment Tonight. She said, "I want to apologize for my actions and my choices. Foremost to Ariana and to my friends and the fans so invested in our relationships. There is no excuse, and I'm not a victim, and I must own my actions, and I deeply regret hurting her. I am reflecting on my choices, speaking to a counselor, and I am learning things about myself, such as my patterns of codependency and addiction to being and feeling loved. I have sought emotional validation through intimate connections that are not healthy, without regard for my own well-being, sometimes negatively affecting others and often prioritizing prioritizing the intimate connection over my friendships. I'm taking steps to understanding my behavior and making healthier choices. Blah, blah, blah. So she is basically saying that she's a love addict. Now, she's gone on a lot. There's been a lot of speculation that she's changed PR firms a bunch of times and that she's really, you know, backpedaling and trying to figure out how to do this PR play. So, but, you know, she's claiming it was love addiction that made her do this.
Two things. I have no idea if she's speaking sincerely or not, right? I don't know if she, right. I mean, it could have been somebody wrote that for her. But that's a pretty good piece. It's a pretty good description of love addiction and how it works. And what I like is she apologized. She actually says, I'm sorry for what I did. Now, you could argue that then launching into an explanation is sort of, that's where you go, really? Just stay with the apology and making, you know, cleaning up your side of the street. I think this is where people get a little uncomfortable with this stuff, which is why I kind of like it, because it's very educational what she says. What the accuracy of what she described, spot on. But it comes off like an explanation for the behavior that led to the apology, and people just want the apology.
Yeah, 100%. So what else would I want to get into? So recently you were on a show on Fox called Special Forces. Can we talk about that?
Of craziness, super craziness.
So I watched a couple episodes. I thought it was insane. This looked super scary. I cannot believe you did it. You went to Jordan?
So they called me, and at the time, you know, I was feeling physically not very well. I kept having these episodes of diverticulitis and things. And they called me. I went, come on, I'm too old for this. You got to be kidding, right? And I thought to myself, oh, they need an old guy in the cast for some reason. I thought I would be that guy. Because, you know, they slot people into these roles sort of thing. And I thought, that's got to be why they're calling me, because no other explanation for it. And I was like, well, where are you going to send us, to the Utah desert or something? They go, no, the Middle East. I'm like, what? How am I supposed to, how that's going to work? And I went out and I started training very hard, like sprinting hills and wearing packs and all this stuff. And it made me feel great. And I sort of responded to it. And I thought, well, maybe this is what I've been looking for. Maybe this will really get me out of my funk. And so I started fighting for it. Like, hey, I think I want to do this. And then they started pushing back, like, oh, well, you need to do all this cardiac clearance and pulmonary VO2s and blah, blah, blah. I sailed through all that stuff. That didn't end up being my problem. I had a different problem once I got there. But I'll let you ask more questions as we go.
Okay. So tell me about the cast. Tell me about some of the people in the cast.
Cast was, you know, when you, much like you with your cast at Celebrity Rehab, you're having these intense experiences together, and it really bonds you up. I mean, and in our case, it was suffering and trauma and just extreme conditions, and it just bonded us up like crazy. And I'll just say that it happened fast too. Mm-hmm. They blew us up on a train and they took us hostage and they marched us through the desert. You only see bits and pieces of the misery we went through that day. But by the time we got to our camp, we were having this so-called lunch, and there's 16 of us. I'll tell you more who was in there in a second, but Kate Gosling, who was one of the people in there, looked up. We were all very quiet. We were shell-shocked. And she goes, it was like 2 p.m. at that point. She goes, guys, look at us. They've changed us already. We're all like, gosh, she's right. Holy shit. We are totally different people. And we are a unit now. And it was, you know, Mike Piazza was there, and Anthony Scaramucci did a great job. Wow. Nastia Lukin, the gold medalist, Gus Kenworthy, another gold medalist, Danny Amendola from the New England Patriots, a lot of world-class athletes.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you think that their ability, you know, the fact that they were athletes, did that make it easier for them to compete?
When I look at what happened to us, Dwight Howard and Lakers, you know, and Carly Lloyd, again, a world-class professional soccer player. Of course, the world-class athletes, you'll see if you watch the whole series, the staff is kind of talking about that a long way. It's like, of course, he's a world-class athlete. Of course, he's got an edge there. But even the athletes struggled with the emotional part. Because there was really trying things they put us through, and you're always off balance and you never know what's coming. You kind of have to figure out what's right and wrong and what you're supposed to do without any instruction. It's very weird. But I think youth was a significant, I think that was the main, that was a main issue. In my own case, I developed heat stroke and brain swelling and dehydration and ended up in the ICU after just one day of this training. Physically, you know, we were diving out of helicopters into the Red Sea and things. I loved it. I was having the greatest day. And all of a sudden I got sick. And it came out of nowhere. I was shocked and I got sick and I got sick fast. And, you know, it was 5 liters of IV fluid before I could stand up again. And when I look back on what happened, first of all, I didn't appreciate, you know, we were 120 degree weather a lot of the day. And I didn't appreciate what my fluid needs would be at my age. And, the other problem was we had 2 canteens. And whenever they came to us and said, are your canteens topped off? If they weren't tapped off, they punished the whole group. So I always said, I'm fine. And I never was fine. I never had enough water. And the other thing, the water they gave us was 110 degrees. The water just sat out in the sun. And it was hard to get cooled down. If I were to do it again, I would get much more of the sort of liquid IV type electrolyte stuff. I would drink constantly a lot, and I would constantly pour water over my head or something to try to get the temperature right. You know, I thought this kind of heat stroke happened to 85-year-old little old ladies. Much to my surprise, it happened to me.
Right.
It was bad. It was rough.
So it's one thing to be physically fit, but also I noticed just from the few episodes, you really have to be mentally there, and it took a lot of mental stuff.
They make a lot of the mental stress. And it is, you know, as you see, as you go on, if you watch more of it, the mental gets very intense. But that was not my issue yet. It was literally keeping up physically, period, end. When they were trying to get me sort of rehydrated, I wanted to go back in. And something you don't see, you get so bonded up with your group. I was in the medic unit and I could hear that they were paying the man that night. They were getting punished. And I started crying. I was like, I need to be out. I should be with, I hear them suffering. I need to be with them. And again, as you know, not everything goes on TV.
Right, right. Great. That's a nice, great background on you that I don't think a lot of people know. So I guess my last question for you is like, what is on your radar right now? Like, what are the biggest things that you're doing, seeing, hearing in the medical field, the addiction field? Like what's in your focus right now?
I'm trying, I still do, you know, I still do outpatient medicine and I still am asked to, you know, help out with addicts and alcoholics all the time. I do that work essentially for free now because I feel like I've had this incredibly rich experience and I just want to kind of give it back. Mm-hmm. What Susan has set up is a streaming show I do 3 days a week on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 3:00 Pacific time. And really, I think what that program has become is trying to make sense of the pandemic, trying to talk to voices that have been silenced, trying to learn something. I feel like she's booked it too far in one direction. We got to get it back in another direction because I'm agnostic on a lot of stuff. And I just want to understand what we got right, what we got wrong, how to, you know, be able to give informed consent to patients on certain topics that seem a little obscured by all kinds of political nonsense. And I want to survive that. People somehow believe today that if you talk to people with, forget agree with, just speak to somebody with outlying opinions, you are you're a criminal, essentially.
Right.
So I'd like to survive and help you know, restore our conversation to civility and liberalism as it was intended.
Right. What are your thoughts on, you know, any pandemics in the future, COVID type situations?
There are a few things that have come out of this that are jump out at me. One is that our public health officials have totalitarian authority in an emergency. And I think we want to have some checks and balances to that, at least some people that are saying, hey, you need to justify what you're doing. You know, somebody elected, let's say, is thinking these things with the public health official. Number one. Number two, people are so distrusting of everything now. I have such grave concerns. I have been an acolyte and a fan of Anthony Fauci. And if you people took things I said at the beginning of the pandemic to try to reduce anxiety, because I knew panic was not going to make things better. It's going to make things worse. And what I would say at the end of things I was saying that sounds like I'm minimizing COVID, which I did not intend, trying to minimize panic, I would always say at the end, please listen to Dr. Fauci, listen to the CDC. I have a lot of experience with Fauci. You can count on that guy. Well, whenever you see footage of me, that part's, of course, cut out. And Dr. Fauci has become a, you know, figure of concern, of conflict or whatever. My hope is he restores his position to where it's always been. And I sort of have faith that's going to happen. But in the meantime, we got to figure out what the truth is, and everyone has to be willing to talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, don't you see that that happens a lot, though? People get put on a pedestal. I mean, he got really put up on a pedestal for a while. And then, you know, the same people that put them on a pedestal almost want to throw them off the same pedestal.
And then the same people that want to put that person on a guillotine, they themselves end up on a guillotine at some point. People got to study your history, everybody. This is how it works. This country had a pretty good version of how to prevent those kinds of things from happening. And you sat in the center of all this yourself, Rachel. This is the same thing. You were the leading edge of this stuff. And It must have been, at least we have kinds of ways of characterizing and understanding it today. But I was there with you. It was hard to understand what was happening to you. It was impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. And people can, you know, do it in all sorts of, you know, circumstances. So it can either be regarding the COVID thing or a scandal, but it is a very similar protocol, right? You know, that it's all misinformation or it's a narrative that gets put out, right? And then it's the public that feeds on a narrative and then it just explodes. And
let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
What I've noticed is, as you said, you want people to know you. It's never people that know your real feelings, your heart, and what you're doing. It's always people who don't trust that or don't believe that.
Yeah.
Number two, the other thing that I found just extraordinary is the stuff that goes crazy and wild is never what I said, ever. It's always what somebody said I said. It's some interpretation of something I said. Was that happening to you too?
Oh, yeah, of course. They take something out of context and then they run with it. But you know what I've always found that's the most interesting? It really, you know, it has much less to do with me than it does about their feelings. And it's what triggers in them. And it's their anger towards me, which was so almost scary because, you know, what happened in my scenario happened between me and really two other people, but it affected the world in a way that made so many people angry that had nothing to do with them.
That is your treatment. So you can make sense of the narrative of your life through being very, that's a good boundary to set. It's hard because it is scary.
Yeah. Yeah. And I watch it go on. I've watched it for years. You know, so many people like to comment on other people's issues, scandals, downfalls. But I think it really has to do with them wanting to make themselves feel better or get a lot of anger out. And, you know, I always try to caution people, you know, like you don't know what's going on in that scenario because you're not in it. You don't have the facts. You don't even know the truth. So, you know, I always try to make sure people realize that the media doesn't have all the facts. They're just reporting what they know. And sometimes they have a spin on it, you know, and people really need to be educated. There's a lot of, you know, ignorant people out there and, you know, and then people listen to the ignorant people and it's ignorant people listening.
The people are getting high on it on social media and stuff these days, I think in some weird way. Can I ask you a personal question?
Of course.
Did your grandmother pass away since we last were together?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Everything that must've been a tough one for you.
Yeah, it was tough, but it was tough because it was when my daughter, I was pregnant with my daughter. So I mean, it's been a while, so it was tough because I was very excited to have her in my life for that. But you know, it was important to me.
I'm really sorry because I know you were working on that relationship. I'm sorry,
but I did get to tell her that I was pregnant with my daughter, so she got to hear that news. So that was a good thing.
And are you and your mom okay? Is that?
It's so funny that you bring that up because I do know that you know my history with my mother because you were very good at helping me set boundaries with my mother. My mother is very close with my daughter. I am still not close with my mother. but my daughter has a great relationship with her.
So let me tell you something interesting. I had a similar experience with my father where we weren't that great, but he did such a wonderful job as a grandfather. I was able to let go of my stuff. It didn't matter because he was doing so much for the kids. Are you experiencing anything like that?
No, you're a bigger person than me. I'm not able to.
Well, it didn't happen right away. It did not happen right away, but we'll see if it happens.
Well, I'm 48, so it's still not right away. I mean, that's been many years.
But I mean, you may one day have such appreciation for what she does for your daughter that you just go, it's too important for me to sit in my resentment.
Yeah, no, I'm trying not to be resentful, but I feel like I turn back into a 14-year-old when I'm around her. And all those feelings.
Understood, my dear. I swear to God, it's just uncanny that that's what you call your podcast. Yeah. You were misunderstood. And I'm here to tell you, I understand you. And you need to keep people around you that do that. And you respond really well to it. So keep people around you that do get you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you being here. I appreciate your support. I hope that you will come back on next time we want to talk about something important, because you are always somebody important to me that I know I can count on.
Absolutely. 100%. Anytime.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Drew.
It's cozy season, and nothing compares to wrapping yourself in a Minky Couture blanket. Luxuriously soft, perfectly warm, thoughtfully made. From movie nights to chilly mornings, Minky Couture turns everyday moments into pure comfort. Once you feel it, you'll understand why it's called the original best blanket ever. Visit minkycouture.com or a store near you and make this cozy season your softest one yet.